because you just need to be better than everybody else. You know, there's a lot of competition. There's more people doing, you know, startups than ever before. There's a lot more support for startups, but ultimately you've got to set yourself apart from the rest. And if you don't have a strong brand and a strong story, you're not going to be able to do that.
Hello and welcome to Clicked Off. Every week we'll be hearing from the people making it big in e-commerce. I'm your host, Jason Chappell. Today I've got Ross Allsop joining me, who is the head of e-commerce and D2C lead at Loki. Ross, welcome to the pod.
Hey, how you doing?
I am really good. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. It's been a busy day. We're just talking offline, I guess, about how both my days have been. It sounds like we've both had a bit of a big one. Sort of the constant fighting of fires at an SME is just something that lives long in the mind. And I think being in this industry for the last 10 years, I think I've learned that it's just never going to stop until I go to a nice big corporate with a nice cushy office. I think that's probably me.
Hey, I've been in a big corporate and I would take this over the big corporate every day. Although,
oh, that's good.
You describing your issues that you were having with TikTok, they are those moments where you just think, I'm just going to close the lid of my laptop and really quietly go and sit in a corner somewhere.
Just slowly bang your head against the desk until it stops bouncing up.
Well, because
I think
it's one of those things that seems like it should be really simple and really straightforward, and it's on your list and you think, right, I'm just going to get this done and then that will be that checked off. Everybody will be happy. And it's so difficult.
I think that sums it up perfectly. I have been working on it for about 5 weeks now, where I have literally just gone toe to toe with people at TikTok on their Lark instant messenger that they've got, bouncing around different teams, different integrational teams, and it has just been a royal pain in the ass. You know, when it's not, I can't get in because my CEO's got the password, it's the integration's not working, and then they want you to go through 250 SKUs and edit one piece of information from 250 SKUs, and then they send me to somebody in India who's got a resolution for it, and then once he's got the resolution for it, I have to then sit on a call with him at 9 o'clock at night, and then I have to sit on a call with somebody from China first thing the next morning. It's just constant back and forth. And like you said, for something that should be so simple, it just takes ages to get it over the line. And we have now, well, that was my last fire that I fought today. And they were like, we're live. And it's like, pop the champagne because it's done finally. And that's how I felt. It was a sigh of relief. I can tell you that.
Oh my goodness. So anybody who can find Loki on TikTok, please make Ross happy and make a purchase through TikTok Shop, because
please,
it's taken a long time.
Exactly. It's taken a very long time. And I think TikTok are yet to prove their worth to me in a high AOV sector. I think there's no doubt that this tool works, and I've been to a lot of conferences at TikTok, on TikTok Shop, and they are saying, you know, look at all these amazing brands that it's working for. And I'm like, yeah, nice and easy at £30 AOV. Try getting to our level and then sell a product on there off one singular video. I doubt it will happen. And I think it's definitely something that will work from a MTA or an MMM perspective, where you can put that into your marketing mix and it delivers some traffic to the site off the back of it. But I just think when it comes to last click sales, I think they're really going to struggle. And I think that's what they're looking for, is really for people who want to sell product on social commerce. And it's going to be a long road for them, and I think they're going to have to adapt the product a lot to make it work for people with a higher AOV, that's for sure.
Well, look, maybe that's a good opportunity for us to talk about Loki a little bit for people who aren't necessarily familiar. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the brand and about the business, and then about your role there?
Of course. Loki is a conscious, cruelty-free sneaker brand. I say sneaker, we're in the UK, so I use the word trainers for anyone that's obviously British listening. We were founded just over 2 years ago by a gentleman called Emmanuel Rebo, who previously had a business called Butterfly Twists. He also has three other co-founders, Philippe, Mark, and Frank, who essentially came up with the concept of what Loki is today. Now, the whole point of Loki was essentially for it to not be a commercial engine, for it to be a brand that actually genuinely cares about making good quality sneakers that are cruelty-free slash vegan where possible. And that's what we've managed to achieve so far is that. And it's obviously attracted the attention of quite a lot of A-list celebs. For example, our first funding round was led by Leonardo DiCaprio, which is obviously a huge achievement. And gradually, we're just taking the D2C and B2B markets by storm in the UK and the US. And we're seeing a lot of success in Germany as well. So generally, Loki as a brand is grown really quickly over the last 2 years. A lot of people are saying it's one of the hottest new sneaker brands out there. We've managed to achieve a lot of what the big players out there we've achieved more in 2 years than what they've achieved in 10, just because of the way we've conducted business, because there was the experience there from the co-founders who had already ran a shoe brand, a very different shoe brand, but one that still sort of encompassed some of the similar sort of ethics and processes that we have here. And I think that's why Loki's been so successful so far. We make all kinds of sneakers and trainers for, like I said, once again, for the UK audience. But essentially, the main of what we focus on are fashion-focused, functional, vegan footwear that looks great. And that ranges from tennis shoes to runners to sort of like Nike Dunk-style sneakers, which are more sort of basketball-themed. And essentially, like I said, they're just going from strength to strength. We attract a lot of different types of demographics. So we have sneakers that appeal to a slightly more mature audience, but also ones that appeal to more of like a Gen Z millennial audience. So that's where we've sort of gone with it so far. So yeah, everything's going great. I've been here personally for nearly a year now. So I've been here for 11 months. And yeah, see a great career here, and obviously great career progression and the business progressing at a you know, astronomical speed, which is what it is already. In terms of my role, I'm the head of e-commerce and D2C lead. So I basically manage anything that comes to e-commerce and digital marketing, but I also lead a lot of the campaigns here from a direct-to-consumer perspective, and I also do things like cybersecurity, IT, and, you know, with such a small team, I'm even a HR person. So it kind of sort of goes into everything. I think all heads of departments are HR people really at heart. You know, we've got teams to motivate, we've got teams to make happy. And that's my goal, is essentially to have a team of specialists who are better than me at everything. And I'm just directing them strategically to make the right decisions, which ultimately is 99% of my job, is just making sure that everything's done, every box is ticked, every integration is made, and that we're in a really strong position as a business.
I love that. And I think I'm really glad to hear, and I'm sure other people will be glad to hear, that even in, you know, a business that is growing and has seen a huge amount of success, that people are having to wear multiple hats. You know, I think when you're sitting there at your desk, it can feel like you're the only person in the world who's having to do marketing and finance and HR and all of these other, you know, all of these other things, but that is getting thrown at you a lot. Now, you mentioned the kind of success and growth, and we were talking just before we hit record about you guys being featured in, was it British Vogue that you were?
British Vogue, yeah. We've just had a piece of Sophie Turner in there.
Okay, and I asked, I had no idea who Sophie Turner was. Sophie Turner is Sansa Stark, is that right? From Game of Thrones?
Oh, from Game of Thrones. I mean, that's how most people will know her, but obviously she probably has had other films, but ultimately, you know, the only one I've seen is Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones is actually, I guess, a series rather than a film, just to clarify that.
I mean, look, I think she's lost her identity to her character in Game of Thrones.
100%.
But hey, it's some amazing coverage, and, you know, you guys have also recently just opened or launched like a concession in Selfridges in London, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, we have. Yeah. Yeah. So we've been in Selfridges for a few weeks now as a brand, but we have more recently opened up a pop-up to essentially give the brand its own sense of style and purpose within Selfridges as a, you know, I guess as a, not just a department store, but also a community of people. It's quite spectacular. So I would definitely visit it. It looks very different to anything else in Selfridges, and it comes across with a really nice, natural, sort of look to it. It's got spikes everywhere, which aren't actual real spikes. But it sort of gives that real sort of earthy sort of look to it, but also with sort of like an element of fashion within it as well.
I mean, I've seen some of these pictures and it looks incredible. You have also, I see online, with the launch of, there's a new Marvel season of Loki.
Yeah.
You guys seem to have had a bit of a play on this, obviously because of the name. And pimped a pair of sneakers kind of in tribute to this.
Yeah. And the CEO and the CMO do a lot of these things, so I'm not going to take any credit there, but ultimately the places that those two can get us into is just absolutely astronomical. It fascinates me where they get us into, and I think that was a particularly special one for me because I'm a huge Marvel fan. And I've literally just been watching Loki season two now. I think the most hilarious part of it, and my CEO said it the other day on LinkedIn, is literally, how do you say Loki? Like, I'm going to say it right because we're speaking right here, but a lot of people spell it wrong, say it wrong, Loki, Loci, all these sorts of things. And he literally just put this post out with the video, and it was just like, Loki equals Loki. So hopefully now people will learn how to say the brand for a start, which is obviously great. But then also, yeah, to acknowledge what you said in terms of it actually being a Loki sneaker, I don't think we're 100% sure if these will actually get made yet, but it's a great marketing ploy, you know, to be able to partner up with Canvas and Marvel with that, and for it to be released on Disney Plus's Instagram and all over the internet. I think it was just absolutely great for us from a brand positioning perspective. It's not the general demographic we would usually attract, but like any sneaker brand, I think it is a great thing about the industry, is you can kind of turn your hand as a sneaker brand to being anything that you want to be. So for example, if we want to do something with a comic book series, great, we can do that. If we want to be featured on Sophie Turner, who used to be in Game of Thrones, great. If we want to do something with a sports star, we can, great. And I feel like as a sneaker brand versus like an apparel brand who I've worked for before, you tend not to get the same opportunities. But because people wear sneakers every day and you have to have a pair and they have to fit right and everybody needs one or needs a certain type, and we offer so many different types, we can kind of fit into many different areas from a brand positioning perspective. So I think, yeah, that more recent campaign was you know, a close one to my heart, I'd say, and definitely resonated with me.
Well, look, I actually found some guys. They have a store in New York, the Manhattan side of basically just underneath the Brooklyn Bridge, were customizing all of these trainers and sneakers for people, but then also doing courses on how people could do it themselves. And it was really cool. And they were taking just like base models, you know, really stripped back models of people's shoes. They had Nikes in there. They had Adidas in there. But then were just layering their own thoughts on top of it. And I think it's a really cool thing, you know, to be able to do.
100%. I mean, we more recently had one of the Soho House artists, Kay Gasai. And hopefully I've said that right, Kay, your name and stuff. And I know sometimes when I said it before, I've had to be corrected. But essentially we've done a piece on him as an artist spotlight recently, with him actually customizing a pair of Lokis. We went down to his studio and filmed that. And that once again resonated very well with our community. We sort of lead with quite a creative community. We work in Soho Works, in Soho House in White City. So obviously it's a very artistic, creative space. And I guess being able to do that sort of thing with sneakers and conform to many different, industries, whether it's arts, whether it's music, whether it's, films, movies, series, everything like that, that whole creative industry is essentially what embodies what we want to be about. You know, we want to be a canvas for creativity, you know. So, you know, the sneakers are one thing, fashion is one thing, but then all of the other different sectors that we can delve into as a brand, like I said, whether that be music, you know, creative industries like design, arts, fashion, we want to be in all of it. So it's not just that whole thing where we're a sneaker brand, this is what it is, and that's that. We really want to focus on sort of bringing Loki to life as more than just a sneaker.
Well, and do you know what? I think it's maybe easier now than it ever was. You know, you had like Nike paving the way for this a long, long time ago. You know,
with Nike ID and that kind of things.
Well, yeah, and then even just putting their sneakers on rappers and, you know, being aligned to things that weren't pure sport or you know, those sorts of things. So I'm really hopeful for you that you can just transcend all of those things and be able to get into each of those verticals. Now, you briefly mentioned that you were in apparel before going to Loki. Now, you were at a brand that I admire massively, and I'm always looking for a way to be engaged with somehow, because it's just fucking cool, if I'm being honest. Now, you were at Through Dark, right? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so really interesting journey at Through Dark. I actually joined them quite early on in their inception, part-time, because I was working for the founding investor of Through Dark, Steve Clark. And essentially, Through Dark were always a passion project of mine from a marketing standpoint. Founded by Louis and Staz, two ex-Special Forces soldiers, absolutely class blokes. You'll never meet anyone else like them in the world. Just very unique individuals. And they have just created something that you would just not expect. Like, even in the early days, they knew exactly what they wanted to achieve. This suite of brotherhood brands that basically were no bullshit, broke down barriers of what a lot of clothing brands would conform to. And basically just having that really strong ethos that would never change. And even now, I still stay in touch with them and nothing's changed. I literally went down to the office like 2 weeks ago and I had a day off, and they still are the same as what they always were in terms of founders, but also everyone that knew that comes into the business sort of embodies that sort of, I guess, ethos, attitude. You know, it is kind of like a work hard, play hard atmosphere. You know, they have a gym in the place, they have music blaring out, the warehouse is in there, like everybody's having a good time, fun whilst working, that kind of thing. But yeah, I guess in terms of Through Dark, I joined them very early doors. I think they were about 9 months into business when I joined them. Steve positioned me in there for 2 days a week, just assisting them with their marketing operations. And during my time in Prime Equity, I worked in a whole host of different businesses. Some of them were startups, some of them were sort of slightly larger enterprises. And Through Dark, like I said, needed all the support they could get. They were a team of three when I first started, and I believe now they're about a team of 35. So I guess in terms of what made it a passion project for me was the fact that I resonated with the brand. You know, I'm not a military guy. Obviously, no one could probably see a picture of me right now, but I was probably at school semi-athletic, but I wasn't the most natural sportsman that you'd ever met. I was into rugby. I was into football, played a lot of basketball, huge into the NBA. But I wasn't necessarily the most sort of athletic person that you'd find going up mountains and, you know, doing all of that cool stuff that they do, jumping out of planes, climbing Everest, climbing Amadablam, all those kinds of things. What I love about Through Dark and why it was a passion project for me was because I loved the fact that they enabled people to do that and feel like they could be that, for example. So, you know, like even just meeting the founders, and they used to do a lot of days where they would get customers in, speak to the customers, and most of the customers were no different to probably you and I, Jason, where might do a bit of gym, might play a bit of sport on the weekends, but this brand made them want to be something more than what they were. And it wasn't just about the high performance side of it, you know, climbing mountains, climbing penny fan or doing the fan dance or anything like that. It was more than that. It was about embracing an ethos, which was no bullshit. You know, I think one of their terminologies was passion, purpose, progress, endeavor for adversity. So, you know, I guess that all ties into the whole military side of the business, is like actually, you know, supporting people that maybe have had, you know, knocks in life or things that have happened to them, and how to endeavor through that, you know. And I guess that's what the military is a thing embraces. And I think what they did so right with that brand is not only did they create clothing that was, you know, fucking cool, functional, just worked, and I don't think I've ever seen such a low returns rate from an apparel brand, to get technical about it. But
I mean, we could touch on that in a minute, because I think that's a big problem for a lot of brands right now.
Yeah, definitely. But I think they just created something that no one else could have done apart from Louis and Stas. And I think that was what was special about it. It was, people didn't just love the brand, they loved Louis and Stas, still do. And people bought it because of that. And, you know, people say people buy from people. It's not always the case, but in Thrudark it really was. And I think they put themselves at the heart of that business. They became key opinion leaders themselves. They became, you know, people of influence themselves, especially Stas, who was on TV quite a lot and currently is with SAS Australia. You know, they just became people that were really influential and just made people want to wear their product without even touching it. And, you know, if someone can go to a website and buy £1,000 parka just by looking at it, that is someone who is really engaged with that brand, and people were doing that on a frequent basis. Stas always used to say to me, I have the easiest job in the world. And I think I've come into other businesses now. I'd worked in other brands before. He was so right, because yeah, having a brand like that to work with that has such a strong ethos, strong campaigns, strong, I guess, people at the top who know what they want, who aren't willing to compromise, it does just make a marketer's job 10 times easier. So that was my sort of journey at Thrudark. I left there November last year to go on to Pastures New. Like I said, I still keep in touch with the guys. It's a fantastic brand, and I just think they're going to go to the very top, and they already are in a lot of fields already.
Well, I mean, I think it's really important for us to highlight this brand aspect, because I think there are so many businesses out there that maybe neglect the power of brand, because it's very difficult to quantify that on the balance sheet directly.
Yeah, 100%.
But you have a very similar thing at Loki, right? That you have a brand that is powerful, that has a meaning behind it, you know, and you've seen through both of those exponential growth happen, you know, in a relatively short period of time. Now, we are in a bit, you know, reasonably turbulent kind of socio-economic landscape right now. How do you see this starting to play out through, we're in Q4 2023, how do you see that starting to play out through 2024?
It's hard for everyone at the minute. I think one of the key comparisons I can make between Thrudark and Loki is I was with Thrudark, obviously through COVID, where everybody wanted to be outdoors as much as possible. So there was an obvious desire for the brand there. People weren't necessarily so focused on fashion. They were more focused on function and getting through life. It's kind of like a survival mode, I guess. So I think Thrudark, for example, like experienced huge year-on-year growth with minimal investment from the founding investor. And that's not to say that there wasn't a good amount of investment, but the fact that Thrudark did not need any reinvestment for like 2.5 years was just absolutely amazing. Loki's in a very different situation. Obviously, it started after COVID. It's in a very competitive market where lots of businesses from lots of different countries are investing in, or bigger brands are investing in. For example, Adidas investing a lot into their vegan ranges. Veya, which everybody thinks is vegan as standard, which they actually aren't, are investing a lot into their vegan ranges as well. So that a lot of the big brands are investing huge money into more conscious, vegan, cruelty-free footwear, which makes life very difficult for people like Loki. I think we're very lucky as a brand that we have such a driven CEO who will actively seek out the right people to position the brand in the right places, to wear the product, to get us into places that no other CEO could. And I think that's what sets us apart. But I'm concerned for brands that don't have people who have that, I guess, relentless pursuit of excellence at the moment. And if you don't, from a brand perspective especially, because I'll explain why in a minute, if you don't have that, I don't feel like any brand in this economy is going to survive, because you just need to be better than everybody else. You know, there's a lot of competition, there's more people doing, you know, startups than ever before, there's a lot more support for startups, but ultimately you've got to set yourself apart from the rest. And if you don't have a strong brand and a strong story, you're not going to be able to do that. I guess the way I see it is, I'm obviously a digital marketer. That's my trade, is I'm an e-commerce specialist and digital marketer. Ultimately, I can build the best F1 car in the world, right? To bring something to life from it. I can build the best F1 car in the world. I can have the best tires. I can have the best engine. I can have the best steering wheel. I can have the best driver. But ultimately, if there's no fuel going into the car, it's not going to drive. And that's what PR is. It's that constant refueling of the car. It's the pit stop. It's checking that the tires are not, you know, bursting or shredding or anything like that. And it is keeping everything going. You know, you see brand drop off, you see PPC drop off, you see social drop off, you see organic drop off. As soon as you stop that awareness piece, things just go downhill. And that's one thing that I have experienced at Loki as a brand. When we have these huge campaigns with like Mila Kunis wearing the sneakers, and Eva Longoria wearing the sneakers, and Leo being seen in Saint-Tropez, you know, wearing the sneakers, we see these huge uplifts in sales. But what that makes really hard is when we don't have that, we feel it a lot more. So we have to do other things to try and combat that. We have to do a lot more direct marketing, remarketing, re-engaging with those people that maybe dropped off before. We have to be really smart with our merchandising, because we go out of stock quite frequently because we have products that are very desirable because they're being worn by the right key opinion leaders. So one thing that I think is you know, going to be difficult for brands generally is being able to get that kind of traction, being able to get themselves into those places with the right key opinion leaders, with the right publishers, with the right, you know, in the right brand positioning and to the right demographics, which is probably more important than anything. I think if they're not able to do that, it's going to be really hard to survive in this kind of climate. And I think that's one thing that Loki as a brand are getting really right at the minute, is we are constantly seeking out new opportunities, and it is absolutely relentless. Like I said, the four co-founders are really just trying to get us into any place that they can. And like you said, you mentioned about Loki earlier, that literally came out of thin air for me. I knew nothing about it. And all of a sudden they're like, we're going to be on Disney Plus tonight. But what? We're going to be on Disney Plus? Like, where did that come from? And I think that is because they're constantly grinding day in, day out to find those opportunities. And you do not get many co-founders like that. Like I said, I think I've been extremely lucky in the last two businesses I've worked for, that there is just co-founders that just have that relentless pursuit of excellence and will not stop until they get to the top of their field. And that is ultimately what the grind is all about. I think things have changed. You know, there's not luck anymore. There's no luck about business anymore, which I think maybe before COVID, there was a little bit more of it, because there was a lot more ideas that hadn't been introduced yet. There was a lot more things that before COVID weren't really relevant. And it took people pivoting in a certain way to make their businesses successful. For example, I worked for a health foods brand called Press, who through COVID pivoted to becoming a vegan supermarket. Did amazing through COVID. I don't know how they're doing now and that kind of thing, but they pivoted to do that solely for COVID. So they changed the scope of their direct-to-consumer business to support their business through COVID, versus other brands who just thrived because they found that gap in the market, you know, and Press did that in themselves. But obviously it was very different to a ThruDark, where they sort of accidentally fell into that sort of like, people want to get outdoors and climb Penavan because they've got nothing else to do, because they can't go to nightclubs, because they can't go to gigs, because they can't do X, Y, and Z. So I think, not to say that ThruDark's growth was lucky at all, because it certainly wasn't, but I think nowadays there's a lot more pressure to be more niche and more targeted in terms of what you're trying to do as a brand than what there probably was 3 or 4 years ago. And obviously the obvious financial crisis, which makes everything harder on everyone. Like we've seen, I think a lot of businesses in the actual trading insights say 29% month on month drop in October versus September. So we're now in October trading. A lot of businesses are seeing, you know, 30% drop off from September, which is already a hard month and is, I believe for most brands, is already about 67% down year on year for established brands. Like, once again, we're very lucky at Loki that we're not seeing that because we are in growth mode and we are in sort of rapid growth mode. So we're not hitting it as hard, but I would like to imagine where we'd be if we didn't have this financial crisis in the UK and in the world globally at the moment.
It definitely throws a different light on things. And I was actually talking at an event in London yesterday and was talking about growth in turbulent times. And the different approaches that are required for businesses in different positions. You know, market leaders can do something different from, you know, challenger brands or SMBs. And then you have those smaller brands who maybe don't have backing and who are a little bit more hand to mouth in terms of their operations. They're the ones who are really going to have to be super intentional about what they do moving forwards, because it's tough out there, you know, and if you don't have VC or an investor or bags of cash, then it makes it really challenging to find that balancing act between where you need to be putting your money. And you've got to be crystal clear about what are we shooting for as a brand. Are we shooting for top line revenue and market share and those sorts of things? Or are we shooting for being profitable? Or are we shooting for a balance? You know, because do we want our business to be here in 2-3 years time and us survive through this period that is unpredictable? Or are we going to go out and we're going to grow as big as we can, as fast as we can, and maybe take a small hit on our margins to facilitate that? You know, and I think it's a difficult choice for brands to make.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, if you're not VC backed or have some kind of funding source, it's extremely difficult to do that aggressive growth. You know, like for example, at Loki at the moment, I won't talk too much about attribution models because I'll talk all day to you about those. But I have been butting heads with one of our strategic advisors for weeks on attribution models. Ultimately, for those that don't know, you have single touch attribution, you have multi touch attribution, and then you have marketing media mix. I think people say MMM in very different ways, but I just call it marketing media mix just to make life easy. But essentially, in terms of how we operate as a business currently, we work off an STA, so a single touch attribution model with an allowable ROAS. So this is very different for me, and this is why we have strategic advisors who are a lot more experienced than me that can ultimately advise on these more commercial decisions. And essentially what that model is that's a real aggressive growth model. That is, reinvest your money that you are making out of organic into performance marketing, even if it's not that profitable. It has to be profitable, and that's why you have the allowable ROAS. But it's very different to how we would operate at a business like ThruDark, for example, in the past, where I was working more off an MTA solution, which was multi-touch attribution, where we would say, right, what percentage of each channel is contributing towards the sale, and how does that affect how we budget in terms of a percentage, which is more of a profit sort of focused approach versus a growth focused approach. So I feel like a lot of businesses aren't going to have that luxury now, where, you know, investors are investing a lot less because they are, and, you know, risks are so much bigger in this market because people aren't buying as much. People are trying to save a lot more money because they don't know what's going to happen in the future. Everything's a lot more uncertain than ever before. So having an SDA approach where we're actually saying, right, no matter what you do, stick to that ROAS and just monitor the last click attribution, that's how we're going to grow this business. To me, that is very alien to me. I'm very like, right, I don't have a finance background, but ultimately my boss when I was at ThruDark was the founding investor. So he was always very focused around how can we make more profit? How can we run Fruidark efficiently whilst achieving huge growth and not running out of stock? So the MTA solution was great for them because it was like, right, where are we low in stock? Where are we getting the right sales from? Where are we getting the right sales and the right channels for the right products that we have in stock? And how does that affect our channel mix, right? So very different to how like Loki work now, where we're very like, right, we've got this product in stock. We've got this allowable ROAS. Let's keep pushing for sales until we essentially run out of stock or we get a huge PR piece and that stock sells out and we have to reorder. So like I said, I don't think every business is going to have the luxury to do that. With brands nowadays, they're going to have to look at using tools like a Phosphor or a Triple Whale or I think there's a few others out there in terms of multi-touch attribution tools where they can actually look at their marketing mix model and they can actually say, right, are we putting enough money into TikTok? Are we putting enough money into Meta? Are we putting enough money into Google Ads? Or are we putting too much money into Google Ads? Because that's one thing people are, you know, absolutely doing. I probably think that 50% of brands are putting too much money into Google Ads. Like, it's just something that I've seen over years in this industry of people pushing too much money towards PPC because they get blindsided by the fact that a lot of it's being driven by brand. Strip that budget out, spend it in SEO, and just have some brand protection ads running on Google Ads, for example, versus how, can't remember where I was going with this, but I mean, ultimately, the marketing mix model is going to fare you better when it comes to profitability in terms of not overspending, in terms of working to like an allowable cost model rather than a single touch attribution model. I'm kind of going all around the houses with this, but ultimately, I think a lot of businesses are going to have to switch from that very, I'm going to call it narrow-minded, but in a nice way, approach versus that more open-minded, right, I'm going to spread the net nice and wide. I'm going to see what works, and then I'm going to invest my money based off what the percentage mix is. And I'm going to understand that in some business cases, Meta is going to deliver a lot of my top of funnel traffic, and so is TikTok. So what I'm going to do is invest in more activity on Google Ads at the middle of the funnel, or I'm going to invest more in CRM because I know that I'm getting the majority of my traffic from TikTok and Meta. So I think that's where things are changing slightly now, is people are going to have to shift their focus to that, and also a lot earlier in business versus before, where people kind of were just doing a lot of trial and error, throwing shit at the wall and see if it sticks. I think that's kind of where people were probably 2 or 3 years ago, where they didn't really know where things were going to go. Whereas now people are going to have to play it a lot safer unless they have huge VC backing where they can afford to burn through a little bit of money to grow a lot quicker.
Well, I think that's a really good point because, look, we have inadvertently stumbled on pretty much like what I do as a consultant with brands and go in and start to look at these things to be able to advise where to put their money. And that's all based around what they're trying to achieve, you know, from a business perspective. And I think the thing you mentioned about, you know, having VC backing and being able to burn through a bit of cash, it is correct. You know, that does enable you,
it allows you to learn quickly, doesn't it?
Does.
I think that's the thing, is a lot of businesses will be waiting years now to make those learnings that they might have made earlier if they had VC backing.
Exactly. And I think, you know, VCs and investors are way less patient now than they would have been several years ago in terms of being able to see progress, whether that be market share or whether that be profit. You know, everybody said, you know, wanting to put their money where they think it's going to be a little bit safer, but they still want aggressive growth. But what growth are they looking for? You know, and I think so many VCs now are saying, okay, show me that there is a place for you in the market. So I want to see top line revenue. I want to see sales, but equally, I want there to be a level of profitability there. It can be lower than, you know, it might be desirable long term, but show me that you can do it and make money. And
exactly.
Whereas before, I think lots of VCs and lots of investors would say, just show me that you can deliver sales. We'll figure out the profit later. Whereas now it's they're a little bit harder, you know, on those brands.
Yeah, and you've seen it in the hospitality industry, for example. A lot of businesses in the hospitality industry are sinking or swimming now, because a lot of them were doing that where they were having heavy investment. You know, like you look at like Chiquitos, for example, like they fell flat. There's a lot of businesses within that group that fell flat because ultimately they were making a lot of sales, doing a lot of volume, making good product, but they weren't profitable. They couldn't do it on a profitable level. So as soon as the financial crisis came into play, or people knew it was coming, and we came out of COVID, a lot of those businesses got axed. And it's happening in all different industries. Like I said, my speciality is in fashion and apparel. And it's happening exactly the same here. You're seeing a lot of apparel brands come off of ASOS or off of Selfridges, because ultimately they can't survive at a profitable level on those places. So they're switching back to D2C. They're changing their models to try and make sure that they stay above water. Because you can go to Selfridges and you can do the B2B place, but it's not going to be very profitable. Like, we all know that. Ultimately, it's a brand positioning play to elevate the brand, to get it in the right places, in the right hands, so long term you can survive as a business. And it all comes back into that volume piece with VC backing and funding. The more you invest in that, ultimately the more top line revenue you're going to be pushing, so it makes you look more successful as a business, but ultimately the profit line is going to be tiny. So I think it's all about businesses using that B2B play as a long-term D2C play to get you positioned in the right places, pulling off and then investing more money into direct-to-consumer. You've seen Gymshark do it. You've seen Nike do it. They're all starting to pull away or have very niche collections of products within those sort of, I guess, bigger department stores or online department stores like an ASOS, like a Selfridges, for example. But then you've got the people like a Fruidark and a Gymshark who are solely direct to consumer, who have just gritted their teeth, hunkered down, and just got on with it and just say, right, how do we make this work? And I think, like I said, with it, it's all about funding. How do you get top line revenue? How does that attract more investors? How do you get more backing off the back of that? And then how do you invest that money, and what model do you use to invest that money? And I think with somebody, like I said, like Loki, we do it in a very aggressive growth standpoint, but it works and we remain profitable. But ultimately, you're going to get 3 or 4 years down the line and they're going to be like, right, you know, you're achieving that ROAS. Now, how do we get to X amount of ROAS over Y amount of ROAS? You know, now we need to become more profitable. Now we need to change shipping carriers. We need to change 3PLs. We need to migrate from Shopify to Centra because they're a lot cheaper. And then we need to change our ERP system from NetSuite to Brightpearl because that's more efficient. You know, ultimately, all these things are going to start coming into play later down the line. Rather than a business like a Fruidark, for example, or a lot of the businesses I worked in the equity group, where the growth was a lot more mixed and it was a lot more, how can we make efficiencies whilst we grow? It's very different when you have one singular founding investor, versus lots of shareholders that want results, that want to see traction as soon as possible. It's a much higher pressure environment, you know, than what it's like if you're in private equity with one founding investor and you're trying to grow a business that's profitable versus trying to build a global brand within 3 to 5 years. It's completely different in terms of how you do it, why you do it, how you work, how you operate as a team. And I guess at Loki, we're a very lean team here. So, you know, with everybody, you know, from the founders to execs are putting in every hour under the sun to make this work. So I think it's a different vibe. It's a different atmosphere. But I think, like I said, I can't remember what the original question was. I've gone off on such a tangent, but I think it's just going to be hard for the next 2 to 3 years whilst the UK especially see us out of this financial crisis.
And I think the UK, it does seem to be standalone in terms of its challenges right now, and not in a good way. Where do you see opportunity then? You know, we've painted quite a bleak picture, you know, of the next couple of years.
It's been really negative so far, hasn't it?
Where do you see the opportunity? Because it is out there. It's out there. It's clearly not in TikTok shop though.
No, it's I think for some brands, I think for volume play brands, TikTok Shop's great. The opportunities are in ultimately that really strong ethos and brand, making good product. So many businesses will take their manufacturing off different areas of the world to shave money off, and their product, you know, gets worse. And ultimately what it's all about is having a story, having a purpose, making the product look cool, but also making a good product that you don't have to, you know, get X amount of returns on, that you don't have to accept a 30% returns rate on because the product's actually shit, that you don't have to have, you know, a million warranty claims because, you know, something's fallen off it or a zip's broken or something like that. Ultimately, it's staying true to your core and what you believe in as a brand. And probably 9 out of 10 brands have it at the start, but they lose it very quickly when the pound signs start flowing, when they start going, oh, there's pound signs over there, let's chase that, or oh, there's pound signs over there, let's chase that. Like, let's just keep chasing things that make us money. When you start doing that, you lose that ethos and you lose the fact that you should just be making good product, storytelling, sticking by, you know, your engine, I guess. Like I said, I compared digital marketing to like an F1 car earlier. Make sure it's the fastest car in the world that runs efficiently, and the brand, let the brand be the fuel, let that do the work, let that actually make the car drive. And I think that's the opportunity, is for people to find a niche, to stick to what they're good at. You see a lot of it with like shoe brands, apparel brands, they'll go into a million different things, like and it will fail, you know, because we all know that, you know, 90% of sales come from 10% of your stock or whatever the figure is nowadays. People will go into, you know, as a sneaker brand, you might end up going into apparel or watches or accessories. You're thinking, just do what you're good at. And I think that's the opportunity now, is it's for brands to segment themselves off into a particular niche, be the best at what you do in that niche. And if you become a global sensation like an Adidas or a Puma or a Nike, great, start expanding into different things, expand into merchandise. Brewdog kind of did that. They cemented their jacket range, made it absolutely epic, and then they started doing some apparel, you know, so they commandeered a part of that market, and then they started to branch out into those areas. So that's the opportunity from a brand perspective. From a digital perspective, the obvious opportunities are things like AI, which, as we discussed earlier, TikTok Shop are definitely not utilizing at the moment. It's very manual in terms of an integration process. I think there's also a lot of opportunities to jump on new tech. So I definitely think in terms of what we're using is switching. For example, like a lot of people are going to be coming away from like Google Optimize shortly when it comes off and goes into GA4. They'll be testing new things. That's just one example, but there's many examples there that any like tech that you can change right now, it's a great time to do it because there's so many new cool things coming through. At Loki, we work with many startup pieces of tech. So like, for example, we work with Swap Commerce for our returns provider. They are absolutely epic. And I worked with Luke for years, you know, Luke and Returnly and all those providers, Intelligent Returns, Rebound, the lot, like, and none of them match up to what Swap can do now.
Swap is very, very cool. I was talking to somebody about Swap recently, and just the opportunities that that opens up that others haven't taken advantage of yet, you know, are fascinating.
They're going to absolutely blow Loop out of the market. Like, I like Loop. Like, I have a very good relationship with them, and if they ever hear this, they'll probably hate me for saying it, but it's just the fact that Swap are doing something that other return systems are not. And there's a lot of other brands and a lot of different areas that are doing this, you know, and they're really trying to innovate above those brands that are maybe more set, you know, cemented in the market. They're charging a lot less for their product to get more customers in, more volume, but then to learn from those customers. And that's like what they're doing with us at the moment. Literally, they're using us as a way to stress test their product, build it out, learn about how they can expand into new markets, you know, and really using the customer is a, you know, a constant evolution of their product to learn where it can be better. And like I said, I don't think there's ever been a better time now than to jump on new tech, than to jump on startup pieces of tech. that's the biggest opportunity for me, is being able to save a lot of money on things by jumping on new pieces of tech. Yes, you're probably still going to need your ERP system with NetSuite or SAP or whoever you want to use. But ultimately, some of the other areas which maybe are a lot lower risk, I definitely think it's more beneficial to go with, you know, startup or very, you know, SMEs in that area. We work with Tagless for our visual merchandising and that sort of thing. They're great. They adapt their product to what we need it to be. We have a great relationship, great rapport. They're so much fun to work with. Ultimately, these sorts of things are where, for digital marketers and e-commerce teams, that's where the opportunity is. In terms of brands, like I said, it's just sticking to your niche and just being shit hot at what you do. That's the opportunity to do something you're really passionate about, versus trying to please everyone, trying to do everything. I think Loki is a prime example of that. We're a great business. We're doing extremely well. But in the early days, we had, like, I think it's about 29 different colors of the Loki Origin, which is the first shoe we ever made. You think, why did we need 29 colors? Why did we not just sell 5 colors that we were really passionate about, or 5 colorways or styles that we're really passionate about? And we didn't do it because we were trying to service the whole market. We were trying to service the 45-year-old, you know, soccer mum. We were trying to service the 25-year-old, you know, person that wears them at a red carpet event. You know, we were trying to do all of those things, and really we were like, what are we good at? What do we know? And they know how to sell and make sneakers. They know how to make desirable sneakers. And I think that's ultimately what we're gradually switching ourselves back to now. And like I said, we've been lucky to have the support that we've had, because I feel that's really fared us well in terms of selling that product. But I would definitely say to any brand out there that's looking for opportunity the next 12 to 18 months, just do what you're good at, stick to it. And just, you're better off having 3 really good products than trying to have 20 okay products.
Do you know what? I think that is so true. You could apply that to service businesses. You can apply that to absolutely anything. Focus on what you're good at, stick to it, and be the best at that.
100%.
And go for it.
And like I said, if you become a Nike or a Puma, then branch out. If you become a global sensation, then branch out. Do those things. You know, I'm not saying don't ever do that. That's just bad business not to do it. But ultimately, you should try your best to just keep things really consistent, keep things strong, make the best possible product, build the best possible brand, and then do those things.
Well, I was reading the story of Under Armour a little while back, where they did exactly that. You know, they focused on,
you know,
base layers. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And they got a load of traction in there. And then they went into, you know, more like shirts and outerwear. But in that, you know, in that
I was an early adopter of Under Armour. I used to play rugby as a kid, and I bought one of their like mock neck like base layers, which used to keep you warm and look cool because it had the X there, that kind of thing. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, but they did that, and then they were like, okay, cool, now let's go into this. Like, it wasn't a complete departure. It was just, how do we go into almost like an adjacent vertical? You know, how do we then go into football boots? How do we then go into, you know, all these other things? And they succeeded at doing it, but they started very niche, very focused on being shit hot at what they did.
Yeah.
Now, Ross, what's coming up next for you? We've talked about what the future looks like and all of those things. What's going on next for you personally and at Loki? You got anything going on?
Yeah, so I'll start with Loki. Just commandeering the sneaker market, you know, once again, being the best at what we do. We're actually trying to bring down our product range, so we have a lot less colorways, a lot less variants, more silhouettes. So once again, doing what we have said, you know, sort of specializing in the style and the design and the function of the sneaker, but doing a lot less colorway. So we're kind of guiding the customer in terms of what they're buying from us, rather than giving them all of the options and letting them choose. I think customization and you know, being able to have the options is great, but it doesn't lead to building a successful business, especially not in the sneaker industry. So that's one of the things we're really focusing on. We've got some huge partnerships to announce as well, which are going to come fairly shortly. which the CEO and the founding team have worked extremely hard on. And like I said, I don't think I've ever worked for such a dedicated, relentless suite of co-founders at any business I've ever worked at. And I think that's what's next. Veloki is, without sounding too cliche, world domination. I think, you know, we're already, you know, commandeering the UK market. We have done that probably, you know, for a long time, especially in the sort of cruelty-free vegan sneaker sort of area. There's no other UK brand that are doing it as well as us currently. US is a beast. It's an absolute beast. And we've got a lot of work to do there. We need teams over there eventually. The co-founders, you know, give up their lives and spend around 6 months of the year out there when they've got families and stuff in the UK, which, you know, is a huge dedication of time. And ultimately, that's what we want to do, is just go into all of these different markets, be the best at what we do, keep our brand ethos, keep our brand strong, and just make really good products that people love. We are also doing things like, we've just gone into the German market with a German agency over there, which I'm managing in the D2C realm. We've been in there from a wholesale perspective for about a year and a half now. And we're trying to sort of make the experience better for the DACH region generally, so Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. And essentially, we've hired like a specialist team of people to be able to deliver that. So we're just doing that at the moment. And we're looking to do that in regions like Iberia and Italy and Canada and those sorts of places. So we're not going to quite go into the APAC region yet. For anyone that knows the sneaker industry, it's very, very different in APAC versus what it's like in Europe and the UK and America. So I think that's where we're going to focus. We're just going to focus in the areas we know we can grow. We know we can get the teams to specialize in. A lot of stuff will be done at HQ. And like I said, we're a very small team. And I think we like that small, versatile dynamic that really just plays into what a small, medium enterprise is all about, which is ultimately the people and how the people grow the business and the dedication of the people that grow the business. So I guess that's it for Veloki. In terms of me personally, I guess doing more things like this, I think like what I'm really keen to do, and I do some mentoring for digital marketing students, and I also do some for sort of startup businesses as well. All free, like usually free. Some of them I get paid for, some of them I don't. But I just love teaching people how to do stuff the right way. And I think I'm only 30, I've only got 10 years in this industry, but ultimately I've been extremely lucky with the opportunities I've been presented, especially during my time with the Park Group, where I worked with businesses like Bremont, Wild Nutrition, Through Dark, obviously, and many, many others. And ultimately, through that experience, I've learned the do's and don'ts of starting up a business. And if I can teach people how to do things right in the very early days, I think I'm going to save people a lot of pain long term.
Nice. And so, if people want to get a hold of you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so obviously at Veloki on LinkedIn, Ross Alsop. I'm sure Jason could put my LinkedIn in the notes.
I think it's been really interesting talking to you, really interesting. And I think there's so much in there in terms of where people need to be or want to be focusing, moving forwards. So thank you so much for joining me.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Jason. Cheers.